Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
And welcome to another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Edwards, and with me, of course, the path of destruction to my giant killer robot, Mr. Robert Lundgren. Come out of the dust. How are you doing?
I'm very disappointed right now.
Why?
Because you obviously don't read the copy the way I write it, Jonathan.
What did I not say that was in the copy?
Why don't you read it real carefully?
The path of destruction to my giant killer robot, Mr.
No, Lundgren. No, the line before, the line before.
Oh, there was a question mark in there, but I know what I'm doing here. I'm not Ron Burgundy. Nice try. I'm not nearly that exhausted. I got a whopping 5.5 hours of sleep last night, so look out. I'm sharp tonight!
You animal. Oh my gosh. Hello, hello. There we go. That's where we're at.
That's where we are. Now who's needs to look at the copy? Jeez.
I'm like, what? Something feels wrong. Anyway, hello, hello. I'm doing good.
You've got one job during the intro. That's it. Just the one job.
I've got several jobs during the intro. Like, apparently to trip you up with question marks, but didn't work.
And all you did was trip yourself up.
That's true.
Table flipped. Well, as always, we're going to start this episode off with a wonderful thank you to all of our awesome patrons over at Patreon. You guys help us keep the lights on, you help the servers keep humming, and you help us make cool and interesting stuff. And I know that we've been talking about a couple different ideas for our next potential Patreon-only subscriber benefit.
Yeah. We went ahead and scheduled it, and then I realized it was during spring break, and
you fool!
We had to reschedule. Yeah, whoops. Spring break waits for no man. But yes, I promise you, Jonathan, we will have a chat about when to reschedule tonight after we're done recording.
Sounds good. Well, in the meantime, you've got some exciting news. You have been talking about Dragon Quest for quite some time on the show, and now you've turned it into something new.
Yeah, so I was... I'll get to this in a little bit, but spring break happened and I was up visiting and I was editing the last episode while I was on spring break. And I noticed that I went on about Dragon Quest V for a while.
I had not noticed.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Jonathan. I edited myself. I could have probably gone on four times as long if I'd wanted to. I remember
how terrified I was when I saw the show notes. And I was like, you're out of your mind, man.
Yeah, that was the abridged edition. So what I decided, I was thinking to myself, you know, and I was in my Dragon Quest mania. And I was like, you know, maybe I should do something with this. So while me and my wife were, you know, on our little spring break mini vacation, grandma and grandpa are watching the kids, I pitched the idea to her to let's like play all of the Dragon Quest games we can get our hands on and review them on a podcast. And she was like, and I'm like, why don't we do the first six? And she's like, and I'm like, how about the first three? And we'll see where it goes from there. And she's like, I could agree to that. So we went and spent $3 to buy the first Dragon Quest game, and we both played it. And then we have actually already recorded a podcast for it. I'm still working on it. I think we need to redo the beginning because it didn't quite work. Like, we kind of found our stride, but it took us like about 10 minutes. So I'm like, maybe we should just redo that 10 minutes and then call it a day because the rest of it was fun. So, but yeah, we're going to have that sooner or later. It won't have any catchy, snappy titles because it's a spinoff. It's doing its own thing. I think we're going to call it the JRPG Book Club, and it'll just be episode one, Dragon Quest. So look for that soon, TM. I at some point, I'm going to have to like just get my hands off of it and go, no more. It is done. It's fiend. We will move on from here.
What kind of soon are we talking here?
I'm gunning for a week. I'm giving myself two. Like, how about this? The absolute latest is the Friday before episode 40 comes out is my personal deadline. But I'm hoping to get it out before that.
We will see it, and we will, of course, pimp it out on the show. And I will listen, even though I have no frame of reference.
Well, that's why I'm warning you. It's a book club, so you're supposed to come, and we'll discuss. So go on the App Store. It's $3, and it took us less than 10 hours, and then you can join the conversation. And that's the plan.
All right, sounds good to me.
One more thing. I got to give a shout out to my buddy Brian. He's been donating music to us because I asked him. Because he's been making music. Like, apparently February was, like, National Make an Album Month, like NaNoWriMo, but with music. So he made some stuff. I'm like, hey, buddy, could I use that on my podcast? And he's like, sure. And then I'm like, hey, my new podcast needs a theme song. Do you want to, like, make it for us for nothing? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
And you'll get a chance to hear some of this fun music from that exercise, actually, right after this segment.
Yeah. He gave us, we have borrowed with our limited license of whatever. I don't know. We just kind of handshook. We didn't even handshake it. I don't live in that city anymore. We kind of like nodded on the internet that it was cool. But yeah. We got a couple tracks that we could use of his. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. No more of that. That sweet, sweet Apple Loop music. We're going to have our own tunes.
And of course, that means we're going to be starting with our off the shelf segment. And this is our segment where we talk about all the cool geeky stuff that we've had off the shelf. And, look a little on the skinny side there, Robert.
I was out of town for a week.
Doesn't mean you can't do geeky stuff.
I did do geeky stuff. That
you
is
did,
in my
you did,
other.
Because you went to the Museum of Pop Culture, which is awesome.
That's correct.
So where did you go, first of all?
Took the kids up to visit Grandma and Grandpa up in lovely Port Townsend, Washington.
Yes, yeah, and you've sent me some very curious texts from Port Townsend, Washington before.
Yes. Well, we talked a bit about it. I forget what episode it was, but we talked about the danger zone and all of that. I can't remember. It had to have been December or January, so not that long ago, because that was the last time I was up there. But yeah, Port Townsend's a weird, quirky little town. And while we were there, they were tearing up their entire main street because they had like repaved it so many times. If they repaved it again, it would like explode, I guess. So they're like tearing out the entire street and putting in new sewer and doing everything to make the town more awesome come summer during the tourist season. So when I was playing Skyrim, Jonathan, and I'd look up at the mountains and there were like clouds in the mountains and stuff, I'd be like, oh, that's cute. That's like video game clouds. You know, that doesn't happen in real life. That happens in real life. It looks like that in Washington. It's weird. See, I don't know if you know this living in Texas because you have like no skyline at all, but yeah.
You know, it's weird that you mentioned that. That was one of the first things I noticed when I moved here from California, was the sky felt like it went on forever. Like when they say, you know, big sky country, I had no idea what that meant until you enter, you know, something with no topography.
Yeah, it is.
It's freaky how big the sky is, especially if you're used to having mountains around you.
Yeah. I got used to kind of knowing what direction I was pointed in by looking at the mountains.
Exactly.
And when that got taken away, it was weird. And I got used to it. And now I moved to a place with mountains again. And now they surround me on all sides, actually. And that's a little weird too, because I can't. It's like, oh, the direction is this way because there are mountains. It's like, no, there's mountains everywhere, man. I can't escape them. And they have cool clouds that look like Skyrim. It's kind of awesome. I didn't think that happened in real life, but it do. Okay, so the history nerd in me, Jonathan, I was really happy. You know that bridge that you see on all the old-timey photos that's going up and down?
Yeah.
You know that bridge? Yeah. Galloping Gertie? Yeah. So it fell down and they rebuilt it with what became known as Sturdy Gertie, and I got to cross that. And I don't know why that tickled me pink as much as it did, Jonathan, but I loved it. I loved every
Probably
second.
Probably for the same reason that when I was sitting in the entrance to Chinatown and I was thinking about Big Trouble in Little China, I was giggly and maniacal, even though it was just standing on a sidewalk.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Yeah. So we went to the Museum of Pop Culture, and I gotta say, I don't want to be negative here. I know a lot of people who are very into film. I know a lot of people who like knowing a lot of stuff about film. I like knowing a lot of stuff about film. I know a lot of people who would get a kick at looking at movie props of their favorite movies, and the Museum of Pop Culture for me was a very expensive lesson, and I actually don't get much pleasure out of that, oddly. it was kind of strange. They had a lot of cool stuff there, and don't get me wrong. And they had three museum pieces that were really, really cool, but they weren't related to pop culture in the movie sense. They had a thing about Nirvana, a thing about Jimi Hendrix, and then they had the sound lab where you could like play instruments and stuff, and that was really cool. And don't get me wrong, like the museum, it was really cool. Like, did I send you the pictures of the armory they had?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, where it's just this wall of sci-fi guns, and it was crazy. And yeah, they had like Morx costume and Xenomorphs, and they had this the cool part was they had this horror section, and there was like just a slew of like bodies being held upside down, like the way the creeper does it, you know, like wrapped in a burlap sack. And I thought it was like cute, you know, I was looking at it, I'm like, oh wow, this is cute. And they had like some pathways you could sort of cut through the bodies, and Gina was getting like really creeped out by it, and I'm like, what, these are dead. And I pushed it, and I'm like, what, this, yeah, it felt like a real body, Jonathan. And that's kind of when it tactilely hit home for me that this is actually kind of creepy. So I got that picture somewhere, I should show it to you. But yeah, it's that was that, I liked that moment because it became creepy, you know. It was one of the it was like the cosmic horror, the Cthulhu, you know, thing, the existential horror, you know, where something like mundane and you're like kind of writing it off is like, oh, this isn't that bad, you know, like why are you so creeped out, it's just the and then you kind of like look around and it's like all of a sudden it just is creepy. Yeah, I didn't think that about myself. Like walking in there, it didn't occur to me that I wouldn't get a lot of joy out of looking at, like, you know, the cube from or the box from Hellraiser and all that. But yeah, just it didn't do much for me, and I was like, what? I never thought I was that kind of person, Jonathan. I feel like I'm letting nerddom down somehow, and it makes me feel kind of dirty. So I don't know how to process that, to be honest with you. I'm kind of upset.
I will let you simmer on it, and you will give me a report in 2 weeks and let me know how you sit.
Okay. Well, I've simmered on it for a week. I don't think it's any different. You
obviously
know?
Not nearly enough, because you're so broken about it.
Yeah. No, I think I know my freedom. I feel like I'm letting nerddom down, and it's like, yeah, you know what? You know, I say it a lot, you know, not everybody's fun is for everybody. And, you know, if you get a kick out of that and I don't, there's nothing, that's not on me, that's not on you. It's just not my cup of tea. And if it is your cup of tea, then, like, go there, because it's a really good museum if you're into that stuff. Like, it's really good. Like, even though I was kind of, like, not, like, whatever about it, I was, like, looking at it like, this is a really well-done museum. But anyway, I'd recommend it. It was a bucket list item. I'm not disappointed at all that I went, because I've wanted to go there for a decade or more at this point. However, I heard about it opening and I wanted to go. So now I've been there and I'm like, yeah, you know what? One less thing to do. That's awesome.
There you go.
Oh, and we took a selfie in front of Wizards of the Coast corporate headquarters, because we were visiting a used bookstore and realized we were like minutes away. And we're like, yeah, we're going to go do that. So
how can you not? I fully endorse that. You mentioned Xenomorphs. So let's move over to movies, because I had a chance to sit down and start Alien Covenant.
That's the most recent one, right?
The most recent one. And I was having a good time. And it gives a little bit more context to Prometheus, so I was having quite a good time with it. And then my children came home, and I had to shut the Xenomorphs off because, well, scary.
Yeah.
Trying not to scar them yet. Although my oldest is getting to that point where I'm going to be able to start showing him R-rated movies soon. Oh, man, it's on. It's on.
Yeah.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, my boys have pretty firmly entered the zone where they realize things that are on screen are like real-ish. Yep. And so, yeah, I got to kind of pay attention to what I'm watching around them. So sad.
Well, I had a chance to watch Atomic Blonde as well.
How was that?
I really enjoyed it. It's a very pulpy movie. It's set in the 80s, so it's got a kind of curious, it's got a great soundtrack, and it's got a curious look to it. And it's really fun. I had a great, great time with it. And James McAvoy is always fun. And then I saw Star Wars Last Jedi, because it finally came out on home video, so we've been kind of mainstreaming that.
Yeah, I've been meaning to buy it. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I really have a good time with that movie.
I love that movie for how polarizing it is. Like, to me, that's like the it's a good movie, because people actually had feelings about it, you know? It wasn't like a movie where you're... It was like The Force Awakens. Like, don't get me wrong. Well, there were people who hated The Force Awakens, too, but... I don't think people like hated The Force Awakens. There were like a lot of people I saw were very like erudite about it. It was like, it was just a rehash of the New Hope and the previous trilogy, sort of in one film and blah.
And I just love how for as safe as Force Awakens was, Last Jedi was nothing but taking chances.
I know. Like I said, I don't know if that movie was ultimately good for that, but I like just how pissed it made people, because I'm like, that it meant like people walking outside of something and feeling it as an artist, Jonathan. That's always what you want. You want
I got to tell you, the more I watch it, the more I like it, because it's like, I think we talked about this when it first came out. It's just so densely packed that it really does require multiple viewings to kind of unpack it and really appreciate it for everything that it is. I see here you've got a couple things, and then I'm going to tell you about how I tortured my eldest son recently.
Yeah, so I was sitting on the couch, and my wife once again decided to commandeer the TV. And again, as always, she normally doesn't make that request. It was the first time since the Olympics, actually. So I'm like, okay, you know, it's fair. I'll allow it. And she wanted to watch the Jesus Christ Superstar live on the NBC. And, you know, I was kind of watching it. I'd never seen the play before. And it engaged me enough that I, you know, I put down my device and actually, you know, watched a good section of it. So, you know, I mean.
Yeah, you sent me that one song.
So then Alice Cooper shows up in it. And I was floored. I was floored. It was amazing. And here's what I found out, Jonathan. In the West End revival in the early 2000s or late 90s, I forget exactly when because I don't have the Wikipedia article up, he played that part back then. And so he's on a cast recording of it. So, like, you can hear two different versions of the song, no less. So Alice Cooper was in theater in England doing that, and then he was on NBC, you know, 15, 16 years
later. Yeah, oh, yeah. Great.
Yeah, no, that song especially, he did it. And just because it's Alice Cooper, it lended some, even though the song's really silly and like in a lot of the different versions of it, it's played very silly. Something
very
about Alice Cooper made it menacing.
Time in terms of musical.
But there's
musical
just something
theory.
Menacing because it's Alice Cooper, man.
Yeah.
Ugh. Ugh. But yeah, he still got it. That was like the highlight. Like
with the older stars, you never know what you're going to get, right? Because like I went and saw Ozzy Osbourne live a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, he's basically just a meat puppet that they just prance around on stage. I'm not 100% sure he's still alive. I think he might have died 10 to 15 years ago, and he's just an animatronic meat puppet.
Like a Disney Imagineering thing?
Yeah, I think they Imagineered Ozzy.
Weird. Kind of creepy, but weird. Okay.
But I'll oddly, you know, kind of fitting, I guess?
Yeah.
I'm going with it. But you sent me that one song from the show, and Alice Cooper was singing it. Man, he's still got it. His voice sounds great.
Yeah, no, it was excellent, and just his showmanship, and the part at the end where he's like holding out the one hand, is like no, don't clap, and then the other hand's kind of by his chest, like no, yeah, you should clap. And when he comes out, he's like, you know, I am Herod, I'm your king, and everybody, like the whole crowd went nuts. It was perfect. It was Alice Cooper, man.
All right, well, let's switch over to TV, because you and I both had a little bit of TV. I know you want me to watch it. I'm going to. It's just a matter of time.
I want you to imagine in your mind a piece of chocolate. And then, alternatively, on the other side, I want you to imagine peanut butter. And, you know, you mash things together, and you don't know how good it's going to be. So, in their infinite wisdom, the CW took the chocolate, it's of Supernatural because it's dark, and then the gooey saccharine weirdness of Scooby-Doo, and they mashed them together for an episode of Scooby-Doo called Scooby Natural, and it was the most brilliant meta piece of television I think I've seen in a great many years. It was so fun, Jonathan. It was such a good episode. Like, I haven't watched Supernatural since season 6 or 7, and they're on 13 right now.
Yeah, I can't believe how long that show's been around. I mean,
yeah, well, they're finally going to end it for good next year in season 14. But yeah, oh, it was so good. It was. I didn't think it would fit together as well as it did, and it did. You know, it really, really did. And oh, there's just so many good moments, Jonathan. There are so many good moments.
Right, well, don't ruin it.
I'm not. You need to see it. We need to have this discussion, Jonathan. It was really good. And if you watch it and you get sad that it's over, like I was, because you know I can only watch it the first time once. It was so good that the CW has commissioned a web series of it for their CW Seed app of more Scooby Natural episodes. So yes, I'm so happy.
Nicely done.
I vaguely read that on the internet, and it might have been a dream. Hopefully it wasn't, but whatever. I'm going to go with it.
Well, I too got a chance to watch a little bit of TV. I've continued watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm now in season 3.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, you know, when I'm working, I like to put something on that I've watched before so that I can, it just helps me to concentrate. But I've been having a good time with it. It's fun. It's very light. It's charming. It's charmed its way into my heart, and I'm having a good time.
I think I kind of fell off the wagon on that one in the middle of season 3 during like the break.
There's been some really interesting turns that I'd forgotten about. So I've been having a good time.
Is that, which season is that? Is that Alien Planet season or is that the book? Oh, Alien Planet season I watched all of. It was next season, the book season, that I fell off of.
One of the main characters is now a very different main character. It's interesting. He's basically been like a completely different thing.
Well, that show like reinvents itself in the middle of every season. So it's been like, what? It's on its 5th season, so it's been like 9 shows at this point, I guess. I guess they're going to fire up.
It does it well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's surprising how often that show just says like, yeah, we're going to do something else. Because, like, I know the What a Twist for season... Have you heard... Have you watched season 5?
Nope, have not. Don't tell me anything.
I haven't either. But Jonathan, just to bring something back, an old favorite from a previous episode. Season 5, at least the beginning of it, of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in space! I will.
All
put
right. Well,
on
are
that.
You ready for how I tortured Carlos?
You tortured your boy?
I did. I sat him down on the couch. He had a buddy over spending the night. I got a pizza. I got some junk food in front of him. And we sat down and we watched Iron Eagle.
Do you want to hear something terrible, Jonathan?
What's that?
I've never watched that movie.
You're a communist and you don't even deserve freedom.
I've never seen it. Ever. I don't even know.
You shut your dirty commie mouth. Nobody wants to hear from your lack of freedom. Why don't you go oppress a people, fascist? That is a movie about rebellion and American spirit and ingenuity.
I can't be a communist. I watched that for October semi-religiously, and I don't know why.
You watch what?
I watched The Hunt for Red October a lot. I really like that movie. I don't know why.
One ping only, Mr. Vicini.
If you please.
One ping only. Would you have liked to have seen Montana? You know what that movie does really, really well? There's just one... There's such a subtle transition between languages. Everybody's speaking Russian, and then the camera slowly begins to zoom in, and it zooms into one of the characters' mouths, and then it starts to zoom out, and as soon as it starts zooming out, everybody switched from Russian to English.
You know why, right? Because he's reading the Bible, and he says the word Armageddon, which is the same word in English and Russian, and that's the switch.
It's so clever, and it's so... Well done from a cinematic standpoint. I was impressed.
Yeah, Jim from The Office has big shoes to fill for the Amazon show of that.
Yeah, right, let's see how that goes. I don't know how I feel about that. We'll see how it goes. That movie's one of my favorites. That actually, oddly enough, that movie I think was the first time I went on a date.
Wow.
Yeah, I took a girl to a techno thriller. Man, I had no game in junior high. None whatsoever. What was I thinking? We had to walk.
Jonathan, I'm throwing you life preserver. Come back from Nostalgiaville. It's fine. You're safe. I'm reeling you in. I'm actually making like pulling the rope motions right now in my chair. That's how sad it is.
That's okay. That's all right. Tim Curry is the doctor.
Come back.
Such an odd casting choice. I'm just gonna.
No. The odd casting choice was Bev Crusher doing a British accent as Jack Ryan's wife.
See, I could never figure out if it was the wife or if it was the nanny. Like, it was just a weird, like, nonsense scene that didn't need to be there.
Yeah. Okay, we're way off topic.
Yeah, man. Completely.
So, Iron Eagle, go.
All right. Yeah, so I showed Iron Eagle to Carlos. It is so bad. It is so unrealistic. Oh, my God, Robert, I loved it.
Okay, are we going to have to put this on, like, number 7 on the list of things to do when I come up and visit? Like, watch Iron Eagle?
Oh, the movie's so bad. It's so good. And the soundtrack is terrible, but it's so awesome.
What's on the soundtrack?
They've got a Queen song, One Vision. Doug Masters. That's the name of the main character. Doug Masters.
That's almost as good as Chuck Saxon. I'll give it that.
Yeah, it's up there. So, I can't believe you haven't watched Iron Eagle. We are going to have to fix that. It's just like almost offensive that you have never seen that movie.
Doug Masters.
Doug
Chuck Saxon.
Masters. All right. Well, moving on. How about video games? Let me guess. Dragon's Quest?
Yeah, well, I just told you I played Dragon Quest 1.
Yeah. And anything else?
I ordered Dragon Quest XI in spirit, which is to say I haven't ordered it yet, but it's going
to
happen.
But you meant to that one time.
No. I realize the next time we get a credit card bill, I can order enough Amazon gift cards off of my credit card that I can get it for free. So I've like pre-ordered it in spirit because I have this plan of how I'm going to pre-order it. It just has not occurred yet.
Gotcha. I'm with you.
But the plan's there. Like, we're in the first act of Ocean's 11, so it's going to happen. You know? It's going to happen. They've been doing stuff about Dragon Quest Builders 2, and it's going to have online multiplayer, so I need people to play with. Somebody buy that game. Some listener buy that game with me. I'll play it with you. I will. And I've been playing Overwatch. Surprising amount of Overwatch.
totally into it, and I've just left it behind, and I'm sorry.
The game's still good. Like, I said, every six-ish months, I just kind of like, I'm kind of bored of everything, and I just want to shoot people. I'll play Overwatch again. Why not? It'll be fun.
Well, I haven't done much more in video games. I've played a little bit of Far Cry 5, a little bit of Final Fantasy X, which I've talked about before, and a whole lot of DCS World, spending way too much time flying deep into the night instead of sleeping, and I've been having a great time with it.
Nice. Nice.
I've got my little squadron of buddies, and we always fly together, and we're having a good time.
Nice. Nice.
And I'm no longer costing millions of dollars to the American economy, so I got that going for me.
Well, there you go. There you go. How about headcanon? That was all in the simulator.
Yeah, exactly. All right, but that's about it for video games for me. It's been rather quiet. Nothing really come out.
So, Jonathan, tell me about your RPGs. Tell me about Genesis.
Okay, so I continue to develop my Genesis world.
Nice.
It's basically mid to late 1800s steampunk setting. Everybody works for an organization that it has been put together to study and combat things that go bump in the night, as they say. Mm-hmm. Kind of Hellboy, if you will, the BPRD, yeah.
Except BPRD
in a steampunk setting. Everybody, there's all kinds of neat weaponry and stuff that I'm kind of putting into it. I'm really kind of trying to flesh out the world. Everybody's going to have these, there's going to be a fair amount of deep politics in it. All the different factions have different things that they're trying to accomplish. So in that respect, I'm kind of borrowing a page from Dresden in how fleshed out the world is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going from there. We'll see how it goes. I'm having a good time. It's really easy to develop for Genesis.
I need to get that. There's a lot of things I need to do.
Genesis is cheap, by the way. It's only $39.99 for the core book.
I'm aware.
that's ridiculously cheap.
I know,
and
I know.
Oddly enough, I have a funny Genesis story. My 8-year-old daughter, Chloe, has stolen my copy of Genesis.
Cool.
So I had to go out and buy a new one because she is totally reading through it. It's what she reads when she goes. See, so we have a rule in the house. You can't play video games until you've read. You have to do a 1-to-1 ratio of reading to video games.
That's a good rule.
She has made Genesis her reading book, and she's slowly chewing through it. And I asked her if she could tell me about the rules and stuff. She started rattling them off. Credit to the developers. They've made a game easy enough for kids to get into. And credit to her,
because
she's
ahead and
chewing through
I'm going to take that credit away from the developers, because kids are really good at that, like surprisingly good at grasping rule systems and like running with it.
Yeah, no,
like
she's
people,
really
people don't give kids enough credit for that. But just in my day, I have run Magic, Pokemon, War Machine, Harry Potter, and D&D, like semi-professionally, or professionally, because some of that was at my comic book shop, and there were 8-year-olds that completely understood all those games. And again, the mistake that children make is typically they're overly aggressive, but it's not lack of rules knowledge, it's just lack of not committing all of your resources to do something cool all the time.
Yeah,
so, yeah, no, kids are, when you and I say that you should just game with your kids because, you know, they'll get it, trust us, it's like, yes, they will get it, trust us. Kids really figure out systems like that really, really, really easily.
Yeah.
It's surprising.
Well, we've been doing a fair amount of gaming with the kids, and it's really starting to show off. And I don't know, I told her that I would buy her own copy of the rule book if she started working towards running a game, and she's all about it, so she's going to run a game for the house.
Nice, nice. You know what you should invest in for yourself and your daughter and everybody?
What's
go
that?
Get one of the Pinnacle makes it for Savage Worlds, but it's like the world's best GM screen, but it's basically like a folder.
Yeah,
you know,
I have
where
it.
You can slip.
I have it.
You have it? Good.
Yeah,
good. It's like I bought one of those, and they're stupidly expensive. Like they're pretty
expensive.
It's
like the front end of a three-ring binder where you can slip things in and out of the cover, but it's on three sides.
Yeah, but because those exist, you can find inserts for any game you can ever think of on the internet, and if not, there's usually like a rules thing in the back of every book that's like, you know, the condensed rules, and you can just copy that, and they're perfect. It was the last GM screen I ever bought. Like, I just don't need them anymore, because I got that. You know, and when you buy role-playing games on Kickstarter, like, you know, if you get everything in PDF, they usually just send you a PDF of the thing, so you can, you know, print off the front and put it in the front and print off the back, and it's perfect. It's the best. I've used mine in 7 different gaming systems now. It's amazing.
So, yep, that's my RPG news. Any for you?
No, but new friend of the show, I'm going to butcher your name, and I apologize. I think it's Cohen Steed. I posted, did you see that thing I posted over on the fans group?
The
American Choppers.
Yeah. American Choppers.
Yeah. 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 We started talking about stuff and then the most glorious thing happened. The most glorious thing happened. Jonathan, we got feedback, and that feedback was, and I quote, every time you guys talk about D&D, especially versions of Magic the Gathering overlaps and genres and histories, I kind of flip out a little. I wish I was in the room for the discussion. / dance. I think that means we need to cover more RPGs, Jonathan, because we have now gotten feedback about that. So promise to you, dear listener, that will happen. And that is why you should send us feedback, because we do pay attention.
We do, actually. We pay ruthless attention to it. Well, I had a chance to pop open my Star Wars Legion box, and I have constructed, I've dry fit my stormtroopers,
mm-hmm.
and I've got them all primed, and I am doing a, what is it called? Zenithal priming. So I hit them with an off-white as a prime, and then I did a pure white just from the top to form a base coat highlight. Yeah. So classic. I've got 21 of these little fellas that I've got to paint now. They're all primed up and ready to go. So I'm going to start painting them real soon.
Word to the wise, Jonathan, word to the wise. Save your really, really good painting for the big, cool models. And little guys like that, just crank them out, man. Just crank them out.
No, agreed. Agreed. I know exactly what you're talking about. So, yeah, I'll let you know how those go. But I'll tell you what, just from a model construction perspective, the construction was super, super easy. Super easy. And what's nice is they dry fit very well. So I was able to prime them without gluing them, so I can take them apart, which lets me get at those hard-to-reach places a little easier.
Nice.
And I appreciate that.
I do, too.
And then, in terms of board games, not a ton, but what I did play took a long time, so it was worth it. I did get a chance to knock a couple games off the list, and I might add I'm not adding anything to the list this week. Played Vampire Hunters.
Nice.
Very fun, completely cooperative game. It's got some really neat mechanics between day and night. I think after a couple more plays, we're probably going to talk about it in a deep dive. So I'm going to kind of refrain from going too deep, but I'm having a great time with it. It's very fun, and it's a good co-op experience.
Nice.
And then I had a chance to play today's deep dive, Giant Killer Robots.
Nice.
So I'm definitely not going to be talking about that now, because we're going to be talking about it in the deep dive. But needless to say, I had fun.
Anything else, Jonathan?
No. For you?
No, nothing for me, but I have now updated the list. I have removed Vampire Hunters and Giant Killer Robots, which were indeed on the list, sir.
What do I have? What do I have now? How many do I have to go?
You got to get yourself down to 15, if I remember correctly. You have 31 things on your list. I think you said you're going to cut the list down to at least like 15 by the end of the year.
I don't know. I don't know what I said, but I'm feeling the pressure. And plus, the stuff that I've got left, it's terrifying, because I've got these big 4X games left.
Yeah, Seafall, The Thing. That's not a short game either. It's not
no,
a long
plus
game,
you need a lot of people to play it. That's why I haven't had a chance to play it yet.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm feeling good, Jonathan. I'm feeling good about that one, because I don't feel good about many others right now.
Well, we will see. We will see. We'll keep you. Keep you updated on my shelf of opportunity / shame.
And for to look at the updated list, head over to Forgot My Dice Facebook fans group. I am hitting save right now and closing the list for another week.
Boom. There it is. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our off-the-shelf segment. As always, we want to hear about what you've had off the shelf. Join our discussion over at our Facebook group,
Forgot My Dice Fans. Pew, pew.
And we will return after a quick break with our Wisdom of Crowds segment. We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by doing one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fmdpodcast.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our posts at forgotmydice.com.
You can also message us or tweet us on Twitter. Find us at Forgot My Dice.
You can join us on Patreon, where we post outtakes and other bonus content.
And if you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give Forgot My Dice a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Store.
Lastly, for those of you who want control to sanction the podcast, pick up your shoe phone and call Agent 82. Chief, it's acceptable to get podcasts on our wristwatches. It won't be distracting.
I just don't even know what's happening right now.
Well, it's classified, Jonathan. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Oh, we've got to get these things upgraded from the 1960s. And now it's time for our Wisdom of Crowd segment, our bi-weekly tabletop news segment, and lots and lots of little things to talk about in the board game world, Robert.
I looked through the news and I was struggling, man. I couldn't find it.
And you failed miserably.
I didn't fail because I didn't say I would get anything. I just have a history of doing
so. All right,
so.
Do you want the one I'm most excited about now, first, or last?
Well, I'm just disappointed. I couldn't find any news.
Okay, then we're going to make it last. I'm going to build you up, Buttercup.
You're going to build me up? Because I'm bummed right now. I've got sorrow in my heart for not finding... I'm sorry, viewers. I looked all while I was on vacation, and there was nothing.
All right, well, I'm going to edumacate you with some stuff.
All right, Jonathan, educate me.
First up, we're getting a new big expansion for Game of Thrones, the card game, the LCG from FFG. First of all, I have to say this is one of my favorite card games on the market right now. I think it is an absolutely brilliant LCG. It is so much fun to play. I'm a big fan, and this is going to be the fifth big expansion, the Sands of Dorne. And as usual, the art is off the charts beautiful. It's bringing the country of Dorne in as a faction, which is really neat.
Yeah, they do that every so often. They bring stuff in from various stuff.
Well, it looks fantastic. I'm really, really excited about it, especially as a player of the game.
Nice.
And speaking of FFG and big expansions, Arkham Horror is also getting a big expansion.
Ooh.
We are getting the Forgotten Age. It's a new cycle. You're going to get 5 new investigators and a whole bunch of new adventure. And let me tell you, the cover is awesome. It's kind of your classic 1920s jungle exploration, stumbling upon some Mayan ruins.
I'm reading copy. Give me a second. I'm trying to find who the Cthulhu-ish antagonist of this one looks to be. And they're being coy. Well, okay, so they've mentioned Yig. There's a thing called the Curse of Yig. So I'm going to wave my prognosticator's hat and divine up that this will be about serpent people.
I think that would fit with the theme very nicely. Well, speaking of everybody's favorite horror, Mansions of Madness is also getting another expansion.
Ooh.
The Sanctum of Twilight.
It made me think of Doctor Strange. Or no, it was Sky High. Sky High had the secret sanctum. And I'm like, oh, it was Sky High. Yeah, okay, sorry. Go on.
So this expansion is going to add the Silver Twilight Lodge, which is run by one of the most influential citizens in Arkham. You'll gather there to do business, plan parades, and lobby politicians, and of course enact secret rituals.
Mm-hmm.
We get 2 brand new investigators, lots of new spells, items, and mechanics, lots of new monsters. It's pretty much everything I want. More Mansions of Madness. That's never a bad thing. I love that game so much.
It's not a standalone game.
No, it is an expansion. That's why I called it an expansion.
Yeah, I know. I just like how they have this big bold thing. This is not a standalone game!
All right, well, next up, Z-Man is bringing back an older title. It's a Spiel des Jahres-nominated game from 2003. And it's been reimagined with a mystical Celtic setting, and it's called Fae.
I read about this somewhere. This popped up on my stuff. Tell me about this game, Jonathan. I don't want to go look stuff up on the internet when I have you. Why think when I have you?
I don't know a ton about it. Just that it's coming and it looks really pretty. Like, the art is absolutely gorgeous. You use strategy to guide druids, moving them across the terrain to form larger groups. And once the druids have joined together, you start to get like buffs and bonuses.
Wow, the art's really pretty.
Yeah, isn't it gorgeous? This is what really caught my eye. I mean, like, it's just a beautiful game.
It is a beautiful game. Well, that's cool. Cool. I like it.
And it's got these cute little, like, almost chibi-style druid miniatures.
Yeah, I love them. They got their hands in their little sleeves.
They're awesome.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And the spirits of water, there's like mermaids and...
Yeah. No, it just looks beautiful. It really caught my eye, really caught my attention, and it looks awesome. Well, back to the expansion train. Everybody's favorite Gloomhaven is getting an expansion. Cephalofare Games has announced that they will be releasing Gloomhaven Forgotten Circles. Well, this is going to contain 20 new scenarios that take place after the main story of Gloomhaven. 7 new monster types, 3 new bosses, 14 new items, and a new character class, the Aether Diviner.
I wonder if that's supposed to be Aether Diviner.
I don't know, man. I pronounce it as I see it.
Well, AE is typically A, or like Aether, like A, whatever. Yeah, not much stuff on it yet that I'm finding, but the box looks pretty.
Yeah, no, really pretty. And Gloomhaven's gotten such great reviews. I mean, how can you not be excited about more of that? Well, remember back when I told you that we got Monopoly Gamer in the house?
Uh-huh.
And I played it with the kids. And what do you remember the critique I gave it?
That it should have been Mario Kart?
Yeah, exactly. Well, apparently the designers thought so too, because they're now releasing Mario Kart Monopoly Gamer.
And then when you showed that to me, I said, where's the dumbed-down version of Formula D with weapons? Because that would be an awesome Mario Kart game.
Yes. Yes, it would be, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I should get in a board game that land on that alone.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna allow it. I think that's fantastic.
Just saying. Crossovers here. Crossovers, people. So what's... is it the same rules as Monopoly Gamer, just with the Mario Kart stuff, or did they amp up the Mario Kartness of it?
No, apparently they amped up the Mario Kartness of it. There's banana peels. You're going to be tossing turtle shells. There's 4 little pre-painted minis. And then later this fall, though, there's going to be a bunch of power packs, just like in Monopoly Gamer. And it's going to have Bowser, Rosalina, Shy Guy, Metal Mario, Donkey Kong, and Yoshi.
That's like everybody who's ever been in one ever. Is there Waluigi? Tell me there's Waluigi.
I don't see him unless he's one of the core game. I mean, he might be in the core game. No, Mario, Luigi, Princess Peach, and Toad are in the core.
Yeah, Waluigi. I love Waluigi. I love Waluigi just because his name is really stupid.
Yeah, agreed.
It's Waluigi. It's just good stuff.
And then finally, before I get to the exciting, exciting part.
This better wow me, my friend. Like, I have high expectations right
well,
now.
Well, for now, we're going to talk about the next set of models being released for Star Wars Legion, and that is Han Solo and the Rebel Commandos from Return of the Jedi. I am so down. You get Han Solo in his camo trench coat. You get the Rebel Commandos from Endor with all the assorted accoutrement.
Were you the one telling me in Star Wars Battlefront why the stormtroopers couldn't hit anything in the Battle of Endor because it was really accurate? So, like, was that you or was that somebody else I was talking to?
Somebody else.
Okay, because they were telling me that, like, they were playing stormtroopers and they were getting wrecked, just shot all to death. And they're like, wow, this is exactly like the movie. Anyone know what the key trick is? The rebels had camouflage on and they're kind of hard to spot in the woods, but the guys wearing white are really easy to shoot at.
Oh man. Yeah. No, that's a legit thing in Battlefront. That is like a major problem. I'm going to wear this color to stand out greatly in the forest. I'm going to blend in so that you can't see me ever.
Yep. So you can reenact that, except probably more fair because camouflage... Well, maybe they'll have a camouflage rule. That'd be fun.
I don't know. Somebody posted a screenshot somebody posted a picture the other day of Star Wars Legion, and they were playing, and they had managed to roll all blanks with stormtroopers, and I thought that was about the funniest thing ever. It was a perfect roll. 5 dice, all blanks.
It seems correct. I'll allow it.
I was like really capturing the spirit of the film. This is legit. I'll accept it. Yeah, so it's kind of cool. The rebels will have a sniper unit in their commando pack. And Han Solo is another leader. And the leaders are a big, big influence on the gameplay. So I'm really excited about it. There's some good stuff going on here.
That's cool. You'll have to tell me. I'm really, really curious about this game. So...
The rules look great. The rules look fantastic. I'm really excited. That's why I'm painting my army. I'm getting it ready.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to. It's on the list, Jonathan. You have to play it to get it
off.
Oh,
yeah. No, don't worry. It is going to happen.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
You ready?
Cool. Okay. I'm ready.
You know what's coming later this month?
Dominaria.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Mantic?
Mantic, like Mantic Games?
Yeah, Mantic Games. They made a little Walking Dead miniatures game. Got some really good reviews. Did real well on Kickstarter when it came out.
Yeah, they make a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, they do make a lot of cool stuff. Well, they have reached deep down into my heart, and they found the thing that I love the most, and they're going to turn it into a board game.
Okay.
Hellboy the Game.
You and Hellboy, man.
I love Hellboy, man. It's so good.
You bet. I almost heard your brain blow out the back of your skull when I sent you the Fist of Doom from the Mopop, man.
Because that was dope. Because that was dope. No, this looks awesome. Have you seen the minis?
No.
Okay,
no,
hold on. Look at those minis. They look so, so good.
The Hellboy's pretty good.
Yeah, right? Look at him. He looks so cool. Good.
No, pre-assembled. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. You know, it's being designed by James Hewitt. You know, he's got a heck of a resume.
Yes, he does.
Little something called Dreadball, Necromunda 2017, Blood Bowl 2016. We both like that.
Yeah, we did.
Warhammer Quest Silver Tower. I mean, come on. I'm down. This guy's going to make a great game. I'm totally stoked. And these models look awesome. And I'm all over this Kickstarter.
Do I have to plan a trip out there in 2019 so we can play this game too?
I'm thinking so. And let me tell you, I played that Walking Dead miniatures game, and Mantic makes really nice minis. Really nice minis.
Dude, they make I can't, I was just at the website, I can't remember
Vanguard,
the name now.
They Kings make of War, Warpath, Dreadball, Battlezone.
Yes, they make those. Those are all fine games. I like them a lot.
Well, now it's time for our Year in the Life segment, and this is where we look back at what we talked about a year ago. We have 365 seconds to talk about it again. And if we want to go longer, well then really we need to take it off the shelf. And today, we're going to be talking about FMD episode 16.
Retroactive spoiler alert.
And in that episode, we deep dove Arcadia Quest Inferno, which is the sequel to the fan favorite Arcadia Quest. And I have had a chance to play it a couple times across the year. And let me tell you, that game is always fun, but it's highly dependent on having the right group. You got to have a group that doesn't mind teasing each other and screwing each other, because that game is all about screwing each other.
Yes, yes it is. Yes, it is. Have you played the game properly with pets and mounts?
Yes, yes. So I backed the Kickstarter, so I got a metric ton of stuff. I haven't gotten the mounts yet, but I have played with the pets.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, mounts is a post-Kickstarter release.
Yeah, no, I don't... That game was fun. Yeah, the only thing that I worried about it was, yeah, there is a lot of, like, poking at your neighbors, which, you know, sometimes unleashes the dark spike within me. And so, you know, I kind of have to like focus in on the chibi art style and the pure ridiculousness of it to sort of keep it light and in the correct mood.
Such a good job of just being goofy that way, you know?
Well, no, it does. It's really easy to keep yourself in the right mood because of that. Because, like, yeah, the game, you know, because you respawn and you know, it feels like Bomberman or something, you know? It's just kind of silly. But it's a good time. It's a good time. And it's tactically deep enough, too, that it definitely keeps the war gamer in me engaged.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It plays so quick, and it's so very much like playing a video game. It's like just like a fun video game where it's just kind of twitchy, and you're constantly messing with your neighbors and having fun. And, you know, it's just, I love it. I love it. The more I play it, the more I love it. And the Inferno gave some great new additions with the demons and the way the tokens work in that. It's so good.
So, yeah, thumbs up across.
Yeah, still holding up. Arcadia Quest is still awesome, and Inferno is really a fantastic variant on it. And, yeah, I can't recommend it highly enough. Go play it. Well, that brings us to the end of our Wisdom of Crowds segment. Join us in just a few minutes when we deep dive into Giant Killer Robots.
Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview.
And welcome back. It is now time for this episode's deep dive, and we've got a quite literal large deep dive.
Your dad joke quotient has gone up significantly this episode.
It has. It's because I'm well rested.
I don't know why that was so funny.
Because you apparently are not well rested, and that's why it's striking you as funny.
I'm rested enough. Sort of. Anyway, go on.
All right, well, let's talk about giant killer robots, because this game is literally huge. It is ginormous.
Strap in for the most epic smackdown this side of the Megapocalypse. Gather your squad of giant killer robots, GKRs. Build your deck and face your rivals in the ultimate fight for fame, fortune, and sweet salvage rights. Scheme, strategize, and strong-arm your way to victory as you dominate the media landscape one billboard at a time. JKR's Heavy Hitters is a standalone customizable tabletop game for 2-4 players containing high-quality collectibles with dice rolling, mech building, and tactical play. Pilot your Heavy Hitter, the biggest, baddest robot on the board, and a squad of 3 support units through the ruins of an old city, competing to either wipe your opponent off the map or reduce 4 skyscrapers to rubble.
What's the first line in that again?
Strap in for the most epic smackdown this side of the Megapocalypse.
Yeah, see, I'm going to give you a hard time about your reading, because I think it should have been strap down! You know, you just got to get into that Sunday!
I do it in my NPR voice. It's the thing. It's the shtick. I got to do the shtick.
Well, gosh, where do we begin with this, Robert?
Probably at the beginning.
Giant killer robots. Let's talk about the way it plays. The first thing you do is you lay out your board. Your board is a hex grid. Makes perfect sense. And it looks like just a huge field of strewn debris, because it's basically the fluff behind it is that these giant corporations have taken over. And the way they clean up old cities is that they let robots battle it out in the city, and everything gets demolished in the meantime. Makes sense?
Yeah, you make money off of the pay-per-view while you're doing demolitions.
Exactly.
It's brilliant. And let me say this, it is a way more believable and awesome hand wave to why you have giant robots fighting each other than Robot Jocks had. Because seriously, Jonathan, Robot Jocks, war has been outlawed. Who enforces that?
Can I ask you a stupid question?
Yeah.
How have you seen Robot Jocks, but you haven't seen Iron Eagle?
I had a sheltered upbringing.
Except that you saw Robot Jocks. So no, not buying it. Yeah, I'm still on that. I'm still on that 2 segments later. I'm still just shocked.
I can't even say I didn't see it as a kid. I totally saw it as a kid, and then I saw it as an adult at the Alamo Draft House. Anyway, sorry. Go on, continue, Jonathan.
All right. So you've got this giant hex grid, and the hexes are about the size of the base of one of the GKRs, the giant killer robots.
So pretty big, because those models are large,
those models
from what I remember.
Beefy. Those models are beefy. You put down a bunch of scenery that comes with the game as well. And the scenery is something that you construct, and there's a good reason why. The scenery is basically buildings that are still standing within the city. And it comes with a bunch of pre-made map layouts for different player counts, 2, 3, and 4. And it also tells you basically what you need to make your own map variants, which is cool.
Well, and it adds to the replayability, so that's always good.
Yeah.
I like it when games basically allow you to make up your own scenarios, because, you know, it provides more endless variation for the game.
Now, you create the scenery in the middle of the board with 3 different pieces. You have a base, you have a cap, and you have a cardboard wrap. And that cardboard wrap wraps around and becomes a building, which slots into the base, and then you put the cap on top. Every single piece has a secondary function. The caps on top are where you're going to be placing your tags. And this is a function that happens within the game. And I'll talk about that in just a moment. But the really cool thing is that the base of these buildings is a plastic rubble pile. And when you wrap the paper building around it, you could no longer see the rubble. And during the course of the game, these buildings are going to get knocked down. And so you remove the rest of the skyscraper off of it. And all that's left is this giant pile of rubble. And it's cool. Now, you, along with your giant killer robot, you also have 3 support units, and these little guys are different for each faction. Even though they behave roughly the same, everybody gets their own sculpt, which is neat.
Do the sculpts actually matter? Are they, like, do they have different weapon loadouts, or are they basically the same thing?
They do have different weapon loadouts. They all have roughly the same function, and they're all balanced against each other. But they do have some slightly different functionality, and they certainly have some different weapon speeds. And we're going to talk about why weapon speeds are important in a little bit.
Okay, I dig it. I dig it. But another quick question. Sorry.
Yeah.
The support vehicles, is it the same thing? Do they? Because there's three different support vehicles, and it looks like it's a flyer, a walker, and bigger something, like a little walker and a slightly bigger walker.
Yeah.
Are they effectively the same thing, or are they all different?
No, they're all different as well. So the flyer can move around the map very, very quickly. It can fly over buildings, and it can basically be used for spotting, but it's got no hit points at all. Then the little guy, he can be used for short range attacks, or he can hang out next to the giant killer robot, and he can be used to repair.
Oh, okay.
And he has 2 hit points. And then finally, you've got kind of your tank. It doesn't move very far with each round, but it has the ability to reach out and hit something 2 to 3 spaces away, and it has 3 hit points. So it's a little beefier than everything else.
But are the yellow tank and the blue tank, are they effectively the same unit, or are they slightly
different?
No, they're
a little bit different. Everything is asymmetrical here.
Okay, nice. I like it.
And everything balances out quite well. I was quite surprised by how well it balances, and quite pleased. You've got your force, and you've got your giant killer robot. The only thing that starts on the table is going to be your giant killer robot, because your support units are going to be spawned during gameplay. And that's pretty much it for setup. Now, next thing you're going to need to do is build up your deck, because this is very much a card-driven game. And your deck is going to be a little bit different every time you play, and this is where a lot of the strategy of the game comes in, Robert, because the deck is going to be comprised of a bunch of different components. The first thing you're going to do is you're going to choose a primary weapon for your mech. And every single one of these giant killer robots belongs to a different faction, and every faction has completely different primary weapons and completely different secondary weapons that are going to comprise your deck. So that gives you a lot of options every time you play. You grab the deck of cards that is associated with your primary weapon. It's going to be 4 to 5 cards. And then you grab 2 secondary weapons and you mix those into your deck. Then you grab a bunch of different cards, like deploy cards, which let you deploy your support units for less energy. Mm-hmm. Reactions to getting fired upon, defensive cards, etc. And this becomes your deck. And your deck is 2 things. Your deck is your life, and it represents the health of the giant killer robot, and it's your actions and what you can fire on, what you can fire with at any given time. Does that all make sense so far?
Yeah, so basically, as your giant robot takes health, you actually have to physically lose cards out of your deck?
Exactly.
Nice.
And all those cards are weapon systems and defense systems in your mech, so it does a really nice job of actually saying, look, you've taken damage, you've lost this system. And I thought that was cool. That's a really nice
parallel. That's very clever. That beats like old school, you know, battle techie games, you know, where it's just like you have a giant sheet with a whole bunch of hit points. It's like, oh, my shoulder's out because I filled in all the hit points.
This is very representative. And when you do get hit, when you do take damage, you can dump cards either out of your draw deck or you can dump them out of your hand. You do get some flexibility there.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Because you know what you're dumping out of your hand, but if you really like your hand, you can let the Emperor decide. I like it.
Basically, everything runs off of an energy economy. Your mech has a reactor on it, and the reactor creates 5 energy a turn. And doing anything in this game is going to cost you energy. Do you want to move your giant killer robot forward 1 space? That's going to cost you 1 energy. Do you want to fire some weapon? That's going to cost you anywhere from 1 to 3 energy. Essentially, you get 5 energy for free every round, and then beyond that, you can push your reactor further and go into the negative, but for every negative that you go, you're going to lose a card in damage. So each round of play is breaking down into these 5 core phases. You've got deploy, move, combat, tagging, and reset. Deploy is pretty straightforward. You get a chance to deploy some units to support units. You can deploy 1 support unit per turn. And you deploy that by paying energy. Now, if you have a deploy card in your hand, and again, you know, when you're building up your deck, you get to choose how many of these that you put into your deck. And if you have one of those cards, it's only going to cost you 2 energy to deploy this support unit. But if you don't have a deploy card in your hand, you can still deploy a backup unit, but it's going to cost you 4.
But just applying resources. But yeah, I like that you don't... If your game plan really needs that out, you can make it happen. Like it's a choice, not a necessity.
Yeah,
I like that.
You're never restricted.
That's good. I like it.
Now, next up, you move. And you move units by doing the following. The first thing you're going to do is move your GKR And then you get a chance to go back and forth with other players in the same order by moving your support units, if you have any out on the field. The move phase is where you really start to see the importance of the glory helm mechanic. And the glory helm mechanic is how you determine who goes first any given round. So at the beginning of the game, you each roll two dice, and the highest roller takes the glory helm token. And that's going to be the first player in the first round. During gameplay, there is a phase where you put out tags, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But basically, any given round, whoever puts out the most tags gets to become the Glory Hound the next round, which makes sense because look at that. You're putting out the most marketing for your corporation.
That's so silly. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. This world is ridiculous. That's what makes it so fun. Now, here's the thing about being the Glory Hound. You get to move first. And that's great, except that once you move, everybody else gets to adjust based on your move, which isn't so great. So there's very much a positive and negative to being the Glory Hound. And you'll find yourself, depending on the strategic situation, wanting and not wanting to be the Glory Hound.
No, yeah, that makes sense, because sometimes you may want to... It's like, I've got the resources to go do blah first. I want to just make that happen. And otherwise, you know, but if your game plan's still coming together, you might want to wait to see what other people do.
Yeah. So now, once all of the moves are done, remember, giant killer robot first, then support units, everybody taking a turn in between. So if you've got all three out, it could be 12 turns before you get all of your guys moved. We move into combat. And combat is really, really interesting. So remember we said we had all those combat cards that basically showed the different weapons on them?
Yeah.
Okay, in the upper right-hand corner of any given card, you're going to see a weapon speed. And what you do is you declare an attack. And to declare an attack, you have to have a valid target. And there's some line-of-sight rules that take into a place. There are some cover rules that take into that you have to take into play based on your position and based on any buildings that might still be standing up. And as long as you have a valid attack and you've declared it, everybody starts putting together what's called their firing line. Now, their firing line is you take the cards that you have in your hand that you want to attack with, and you order them based on their weapon speed. The faster a weapon fires, the earlier in the combat it's going to fire. And you put those all face down in order. Now, let's say you want to also get your support units in on this attack, or maybe you want one of your support units to repair your giant killer robot. They have a speed as well, and you put them face up into your firing line, which kind of gives a hint as to what's going to happen. Once everybody has constructed their firing line, everybody reveals their declared attacks. You total up the energy cost of what you're firing, and you deduct that from your giant killer robot right away.
Right.
If you don't have enough energy to pay for all of your declared weapons, then you can spend the critical energy, which means that you're going to be dumping cards into your damage pile. Once everybody has got your firing line up to speed and we've revealed and we're ready to go, you then start resolving weapons from fastest to slowest, and it's the entire table simultaneously. So basically, it's all the weapons are firing at the same time, which is really kind of neat because that's exactly how it would be if you had this kind of contest, and it's just based on which weapon can fire the fastest.
So if there's a tie, does anybody go first, or is it simultaneous?
Well, that's where it's been so meticulously balanced, because there will never be a tie. No weapon has the exact same value. Speed goes anywhere from sub 100 all the way up to well over 600.
Okay.
So they have plenty of values, in that every card will have a distinct place where it sits in an exchange.
All right.
And remember, because you've got so many weapons choices, but you can only pick one primary and two secondaries any given game, you've got a ton of different options. So it's going to play out very differently every time. So then you start resolving these cards back and forth, and that's a two-step process. The first thing you do is you take two black die, and you roll them, two d6, and those d6, you take the total and compare it to the defense value of the target. So to hit a heavy hitter, for instance, a basic heavy hitter that hasn't been modified by a card, it takes 5+ to hit. Support units are smaller. They're a little harder to hit, right? So it takes 7+ to hit them.
And this is on 2d6?
2d6.
Unmodified?
Unmodified, yeah.
Okay, and it's just, it's a 7 plus, so you're still hitting like half the time, even on the little guys.
Exactly. But there are modifiers that come into play with cards, and that's another thing that you can spend.
Oh, the defensive systems you were talking
about.
Exactly.
So let's say that somebody's firing Wolfpack missiles at me, and they're very, very fast. They have a speed of something really low, like 84. So they're one of the first things that they're going to fire in a combat scenario. So they fire, and I happen to have a missile defense system in my hand. So I'll play that card. That goes into my discard pile, not my damage pile. And once I've played that card, all of a sudden my 5 becomes a 7. Or on a support unit, a 7 will become a 9.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. And do you play that before or after the thing's fired? Like, is this a counter, or is it something you have to...
It's a counter.
Okay.
Depending on what value you get out of those dice, you are either going to hit or you're not. And if you hit, you move into the next segment of combat, which is where you basically do an armor save. So every weapon has a set damage amount. Take, for instance, one of the bigger guns in the game, the Dire Laser. And the Dire Laser, really slow to fire. It's got a weapon speed of 624, so it's going to be one of the last things to fire. But if it hits, it does 7 damage. So
ouch.
That's a big hit. So here's the way this works. Let's say you roll your 2 black die and you get a hit, right? You've successfully hit the enemy robot. That person then needs to take a number of dice equal to the damage being dealt to them. So in this case, if it was 7, they would take 7 white dice. And you roll them. You have an armor save value. And as long as you meet or exceed that armor save value, which, by the way, can be modified, every single one of those dice gets resolved individually, and anything that meets or exceeds the armor save target gets removed from the damage. So your base armor value is a 5. So 5 plus, so 5 or 6, allows you to avoid damage. You roll your 7 dice, you get a 2, 2 threes, 2 fours, a 5, and a 6. So that means that 5 and that 6 are removed from the damage pool because you successfully countered them with your armor save, so you end up taking a net 5 damage.
And then you discard 5 cards.
Exactly. Then you have to discard 5 cards into your damage pile. And ouch. Considering that your deck maxes at 25, taking a 5-point hit hurts.
And is that combat?
And that is combat, in a nutshell. So you go down the firing line, everybody announces when they have the next fastest weapon, you resolve that damage, you can fire on the support units, or you can fire on the heavy hitters. And remember, you have to have a valid target, and that's going to be based on line of sight and range, because every weapon has a range. And that's all there is to combat. It's so simple, and it's fast.
Nice.
And what's cool is it really does feel like you're out there firing weapons at each other, because everything has a slightly different speed, so it all fires off at a different time. So now we move into the tagging phase. And the tagging phase is where positioning on the battlefield starts to get interesting. Any building that one of your units is sitting next to, during the tagging phase, you'll get an opportunity to tag, which is to put a little marker on the top of the building, on the roof. And the reason you want to do this is because if you get 4 tags on a building, the building basically, it gets shattered, and then you permanently own it, and that's one of the win conditions. Anybody who gets 4 destroyed buildings wins the game.
I
saw
a picture on the Kickstarter of people with multiple tags on it. Do you all get credit, or is it whoever has the most?
Ah, but see, here's the thing. There's a limited number of slots on the building.
Mm-hmm.
There's only 6 slots. So no, you're only going to have one person be able to hit 4 at any given time.
That's true. Okay.
So, and I'm glad that you said that, because that brings up another mechanic, in that you can tag over somebody else's tag.
Okay, so you have to get 4, not 4 total. Okay,
exactly.
Got it.
Okay. 4 of the same faction. Now, of course, the other way to win the game is to destroy all the other robots.
Right, well, that just makes sense.
After the tagging phase, you reset. Everybody replenishes their energy reactor back up to 5. You draw cards back into your hand. Your hand size is 6. If your deck is empty, you shuffle your discard pile and turn it back down to the faction deck.
Okay.
The other thing that you get during the tagging phase is everybody who tags a building gets a sponsor card. And these sponsor cards are wilds. Anybody can use them as long as they've tagged a building and get it into their hand. And this is where stuff really starts to get crazy quick, because the sponsor cards do crazy stuff. Everything from being able to spawn a support unit at no cost to defensive measures to offensive measures. And it's all based around these different fake corporations trying to sponsor these giant killer robots. So think
like Hapsi, like exactly. The Hapsi Corporation exactly. That they have in there.
So during the reset phase, everybody goes back. Your energy reactor comes back up to 5. Your faction cards go back up to 6. But the sponsor cards don't count towards your hand limit. So you always have 6 of your deck in your hand, plus any sponsor cards that you get. And then whoever placed the most hollow board tags in the previous phase gets to be the Glory Hound the next round.
Okay, that makes sense. And at what phase does your robot buddy, you know, fix you?
Well, that would be declared as an attack. So instead of declaring an attack, you declare that he's going to fix your robot. He has to be right next to your robot, and he lets you reclaim cards back from your damage pile back into your discard pile, mixing them back into your deck. And that's it. That's Giant Killer Robots.
I like it.
It plays surprisingly quickly. The first play, it's going to take a little bit of getting used to because there's a lot to learn. But once you've learned it, it's awesome. And the best thing that this game has going for it is variety. Because you have a deck of, I think it's 8 pilot cards. And each pilot has an asymmetrical power on it. Every faction has access to all the pilots. So every game that you play of this, you can choose different weaponry, you can choose a different pilot, and you're going to get this huge mix of possible decks. And that's really neat.
Nice. So, Jonathan, how's that rule book?
The rule book, for the most part, is pretty straightforward and pretty easy. The only thing that was missing and that really kind of hurt me during the first play of the game where I was still learning and needing to find stuff is that there was no index. And that hurt.
Yeah. It's the age-old problem.
Yeah. This one in particular really needed an index. I see a game like this really benefiting from the Fantasy Flight model of having the learn how to play guide and then having a rule book that you can reference. Now, I forgot to mention one thing. There is also a concept in the game called achievements, and this is very video gamey. There are a couple different actions that earn you an achievement. Anytime you finish a combat round with all 3 of your support units on the table, you're going to get an achievement. And there's a couple other achievements right along those lines that you can do during the gameplay. Anytime you earn an achievement, you get to take a little tile with your pilot's face on it and you slide it across the achievement board. And every couple of achievements, you're going to unlock an upgrade. And that upgrade comes in the form of flipping over a tile that's associated with your mech. So, for instance, the target number to hit an opposing heavy hitter at the beginning of the game is 5+. When you hit the achievement, which is the 3rd level achievement, you flip that over, and suddenly it's only a 4+ to hit the heavy hitter.
Oh, for you. Not your guy, but on other guys.
Yeah, exactly. You have become deadlier.
Nice. Okay. That works. I like it.
So, yeah, the achievements are really cool. Plus, because there's specific achievements that you're working towards, sometimes it might seem to other players like you're doing weird stuff in the game, but realistically what you're doing is you are trying to set yourself up to get an achievement, which is going to make you a more effective combatant.
Which is exactly like a video game.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how long it took me to master the Reinhardt, you know, over the hammer smash, knock him down, hit him with the flaming thing, and then charge him, because I'd always do it in the opposite order, but I had to do it to get that achievement. Well, okay, so this is the thing that struck me. You were sending me photos of your playthrough. When you look at the models and the stuff individually, the models and the board look very, very, I don't know what the word is. It doesn't look complicated. It looks very basic. I don't know what else to say about it. But when you had everything out there, what struck me about the board was how everything looked like cel shaded, like the background and the way.
And that's exactly what it's going.
Yeah, for. It's so weird because I was looking at this and I was having this like really disconnected moment where I was like, is this a video game? Like I was having trouble processing it, and I thought that was really cool. Like I liked that. The art direction really lent itself well to that. And the fact that they were able to model the rubble piles to have light and shadow in such a way that it looks cel shaded in real life, I thought was really a really interesting thing.
Kind of attention to detail everywhere in this game. I mean, Weta Workshop designed the models and designed the concept of the game and the world. And, you know, what do they do? Their entire existence is all about world building. And guess what? That's exactly what they've done here.
Yeah, and even if you wanted to paint your support units and you weren't that good, like, go get some of that Games Workshop, the armor, what was it, the armor shader that we both thought was magic when we were painting Blood Bowl?
Oh, yeah, there's a couple different ones. There's the Nuln Oil, there's the...
The Nuln Oil, yeah, get the Nuln Oil and just splash that on some of those minis, and it'll just make the details pop, and it'll be fine. If you really want to get fancy, then just do a dry brush of a similar color over it to just kind of bring out the details and the lines, and it would look fine. Yeah, I mean, it would look just great on the tabletop just doing that, something that simple, so... And it would kind of jive with the cell shading stuff. So, yeah. No, I was really surprised that the art direction just, you know, like, because I remember the Kickstarter and then just seeing it in real life was just really, like, just not, like, weird, but it was just, I don't know how to describe it. There was something unreal about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it really just comes together. Like, it's just such a cool world. And it's interesting because one of the choices they made from an art direction perspective is that the buildings and the game board are all gray and just, you know, buried concrete, but then everything that you interact with on the game is a bright color, and it just kind of makes it seem like what it is, you know. It's like corporations fighting over advertising. So once the game comes together on the board, it's kind of interesting because what you're left with is this. It's kind of the same effect that you get when you're in, like, when you look at pictures of, like, Hong Kong or Tokyo at night with all that different neon on.
Yeah.
That's the effect you get on the game board. It's really neat.
Besides the index, was there anything else off with the execution, or does this game do everything it wants to do well?
No, I was really genuinely impressed. This game comes together in every way, and it's supremely fun to play, and it's very easy to learn and super, super quick.
And how many players would you say you should play this game with? Does it work good with just two, or should you...
Well, the nice thing is I've played it with two. I've played it against the AI because there is a single-player mode in the box as well.
Nice.
And it goes all the way up to four. And it just depends on what you're looking for in terms of an experience. If you play it with two players, you're going to have a very centralized experience. And rules like the flanking rule and whatnot are not going to come into play very much because all you're doing is facing off against one opponent and their drones. But when you play with larger player counts, like three or four, suddenly that battlefield is constantly in flux and you have to watch your back and you have to keep your head on a swivel. And that's awesome in a different way. So it works in every way.
Well, Jonathan, as we wrap up this deep dive, the final question, the best question, the question I copied for the Dragon Quest podcast, even, is it fun?
Oh, yeah. It's super fun. I had a great time with it. I've played it a couple times, and it's just every time I play it, I'm having more and more fun with it because I get to try a new combination of stuff. I get to try a new primary, secondary combination, see what works for me. I get to try a new pilot, see how that works out, and it's neat. I've been having a blast. All right, well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive of Giant Killer Robots, and of course, that does bring us to the end of our episode, episode 39. We're hitting middle age, Robert. Next episode. It's happening.
That's no. I refuse to believe in that. Our show is a dwarf or an elf even.
But Robert, this is going to be 40.
Is there a joke in there that I'm not getting?
No, there was a movie. This is 40.
Oh, I didn't see that movie.
Yeah. Just like didn't see Iron Eagle.
Yeah. Well, your joke fell flat, like your singing voice.
I should have a lovely singing voice.
I don't know that. I got nothing.
Well, that brings us to the end of episode 39 of the Forgot My Dice podcast. Once again, join us on all of our digital domains. We'd love to hear from you. We're getting the best feedback and conversation on the Facebook fan page. And Robert, as always, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I'm sorry about FMD Classic. I was on vacation. I'm going to get that. Hopefully the one that we're behind on will be out soon. But yeah, I'm sorry. And listen to the new podcast, the JRPG Book Club. Play Dragon Quest 1. It's $4. $3. It's $3. No excuses. Dragon Quest 1. It's going to be good times. And I talked the wife into doing 1, 2, and 3. So there we go. We got at least 6 episodes. And we'll see. Or 5 episodes. Whatever. But we'll see. We'll see where Gina is at the end of that. So... I'll see you over there, I guess, at some point soon.
Well, of course, that brings us to the last thing. Robert, party on.
Party on, Jonathan.
The music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elithiel. Additional music was provided by Brian Winkleman. Funding for the Forgot My Dice podcast was provided by our supporters on Patreon. Thank you.